If you've ever wondered where the money comes from for conservation groups to buy up or at least get easements on sensitive lands, there are several answers. One of the answers is a federal entity called the Land and Water Conservation Fund, which, like everything else having to do with the federal government, often gets turned into an acronym, LWCF. The fund has done some good work over the years. You're about to hear about that and about challenges to the fund's future. We have another guest coming up. We start with Kelly Beamer, who's the executive director of the Coalition of Oregon Land Trusts. Kelly, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much, Jeff. It's great to participate.
Can we assume from the name that the various land trusts of Oregon work together through your coalition?
Absolutely. The Oregon Land Trust community is a close-knit network of land trusts that work on the community, state, and national level to protect important lands from various threats.
And that is the basic goal of any land trust, is to protect important lands?
Absolutely. To protect open space, significant agricultural lands, and special waterways as well.
All right. So generally out in the country then. I mean, you don't do a model of urban kind of work, I would think.
Actually, a lot of our members do work in the urban areas. The Trust for Public Land, for example, is a member of our coalition, and they work to protect parks and places that have a strong connection with their local communities in urban and downtown areas.
So do land trusts have to buy lots of land?
Land trusts are nonprofit entities that do buy land and manage land in perpetuity. They also work with private landowners to purchase conservation easements that would protect special values of landscapes in perpetuity.
In perpetuity, so once an easement is signed, that easement sticks with the property regardless of who owns it?
Absolutely. If a development right is sold and a land trust purchases that as part of the conservation easement, it ensures that that land will not be developed and will remain an open space or a protected area or a functioning farm, forest, or ranch land in perpetuity.
Particularly in Oregon, do you ever run up against situations with the centralized land use planning in Oregon where a community, for example, identifies an area that you want to protect as part of the urban growth boundary or something along those lines?
Well, we're very fortunate in Oregon to have, you know, one of the national models for land use planning, and it's protected a lot of our rural landscape, which is great. But land trusts can work in alignment with that program. There's special instances where there's very large ranch lands, for instance, that could be developed into ranchettes. And so land trusts have an opportunity to work with landowners to ensure the large landscapes are protected. And it can be a strong complementary tool with the Oregon land use system.
That particular situation you talked about, is that a fairly typical one? We've got agricultural land that's been in a family for generations, and now the owner wants to divide it up into smaller chunks for next generation ranchers or farmers?
You know, we're starting to see more of that as our population of landowners is aging. I think the average age of a farmer in Oregon is around 58 or 59. And so as they're planning for their estate and future generations, they're starting to think about wanting to conserve that land. And in Oregon, related back to the Land and Water Conservation Fund, there's been some really important investments made, in particular for farmland that has natural resource benefits like endangered species habitat also on those lands. So it's been a real sweet spot to be able to use that program to protect land that is working that also has, for example, rare oak and prairie habitat.
Explain then the workings of the Land and Water Conservation Fund, how long it's been around and how it is accessed.
Absolutely. Well, the Land and Water Conservation Fund was passed by Congress in 1964 with a very strong bipartisan commitment to safeguard natural areas throughout the country. And the idea is pretty simple. It was essentially an idea to invest a portion of federal offshore drilling fees and royalties to protect land and water for the Americans. And it's arguably one of the most significant conservation programs in the country. It's been able to fund the protection of national iconic landscapes like the Grand Canyon, the Big Sur coastline, down to local recreation areas like bike paths or even pools. So in that regard, I think it's a program that's probably touched nearly every American in the country. And right now we're in a really critical timeline because the Atlanta Water Conservation Fund is set to expire in less than 40 days, September 30th. So we are really trying to work as a Land Trust Coalition to demonstrate how important it is to funding projects past and future. There's a lot of really important projects on the line in Oregon and across the country.
So this horizon that could be met in 40 days, is it because the fund will run out of money or because it will legislatively cease to exist?
It will legislatively sunset, so to speak. So when the bill was created in 1964, it had a sunset date of September 30th, 2015. And so we're coming into the zone where it will be expiring. And so those funds will continue, you know, under the act, if it is reauthorized, which we are hoping, energy companies will be obligated to continue to invest in this fund so we can ensure these natural and recreation resources are protected.
We're talking about land conservation and water conservation, and specifically the Land and Water Conservation Fund, a federal fund that does face a legislative expiration without congressional action on September 30th, 2015. Kelly Beamer is the executive director of the Coalition of Oregon Land Trusts. We'll also bring in now Megan Wargo, who's the director of land protection for the Pacific Crest Trail Association. Megan, welcome to you.
Thank you very much.
And I want to remind our listeners, you can join this conversation, 800-838-3760 by phone anywhere in our listening area, or deliver your comments or concerns by email at jx@jeffnet.org. Tell us, if you would, Megan Wargo, how much help the Land and Water Conservation has been, a fund rather, has been in protecting some of the lands that are adjacent to or maybe even part of the Pacific Crest Trail.
Certainly. The Land and Water Conservation Fund has been absolutely instrumental in helping to create the Pacific Crest Trail experience that we have today. In the past 15 years, we've seen approximately $25 million come from the Land and Water Conservation Fund to acquire approximately 17,000 acres along the PCT. And, you know, within that 17,000 acres, that's a range of different types of projects that includes In the state of Washington, we were able to work with partners and agency partners to help consolidate a checkerboard and really create a landscape through the Cascades that is a beautiful public scenic way. In Southern Oregon, we've worked with the BLM to help fill in holes within the Cascades-Siskiyou National Monument along the PCT. So in that case, you're not only getting that recreational benefit, but also helping to fill in the gaps in some of that biological diversity for the monument. And then there's also things that it's done for the trail on the safety side. Down in Agua Dulce, we in Southern California, we've been working with Land and Water Conservation Fund money to buy parcels that would allow us to relocate the trail off of a dangerous roadwalk that is currently along on a highway.
That checkerboard that you mentioned, Megan, is an issue throughout Western Oregon, Kelly Beamer, because of the way that the railroad land grants were made to what was then the Oregon and California Railroad, which is still the land involved in the ONC lands and timber production, and BLM manages them. But how much of the effort of the Coalition of Oregon Land Trust or the land trust themselves is involved with trying to make some contiguity in open spaces through that checkerboard?
I don't believe our members are directly involved with the ONC discussion. I think that the work that they do, you know, is a potential tool and a solution in terms of being able to create that connectivity, as you talked about. I mean, land trusts have the ability to be flexible, responsive, and work with private landowners to purchase land and conserve it. So I think that there's an opportunity there, and I think just going back to looking ahead and the importance of having LWCF as a federal funding source that can come into the state for those landscape solutions, those larger landscape solutions, is really, really important.
Megan, but it sounds like it's been instrumental to you in specific instances where you got federal land and then you got private land and then back to federal land and so forth with the PCT in particular.
Certainly.
Yeah.
It definitely helps with management of the trail and of the landscape itself for the federal partners. And, you know, I definitely think it's worth noting that reauthorization of the Land and Water Conservation Fund is so key because there are still a number of those checkerboards that are out there and parcels that right now we know are available with willing sellers that would consolidate a 30-mile section of a trail that currently goes every other section through public and private land.
And the figure you mentioned was $15 million that has been used by the PCTA to get 17,000 acres of land. Is that right?
$25 million over the last 15 years.
25 over 15 years. Okay. And so give us an idea, if you would, Kelly, about the overall size of the Land and Water Conservation Fund. I mean, I have to believe it's used across all 50 states.
Absolutely. It has touched all 50 states. As I said, every year, $900 million in royalties are paid by energy companies for drilling for oil and gas. And so this is generally put into the general treasury. And every year, the president creates a list of projects, LWCF projects around the country that he believes or she would believe should be funded. And then Congress goes through an appropriation process. And it is a battle every year to access those dollars, and it's intensely competitive. And unfortunately, we've seen a situation where less than half of that $900 million has actually been rolled out in the ground for conservation projects, and a large part of it continues to be diverted for other issues.
Diverted for other issues not related to conservation at all?
Correct. So that's sort of the annual struggle that conservation groups go through every year to really go to bat for their projects, and agencies as well. But all of that really will be irrelevant if the program expires this year and we don't have the option to go through that. So we're really looking for a solution that would both permanently authorize the Land and Water Conservation Fund, but also ensure that that full $900 million is available for conservation around the country.
What portion of the 900 is often available? Is it very different from year to year?
On average, the last several years, it's been between 300,000 and 400, or 300 million and 400 million.
Okay, so not even half of what is supposed to be in the LWCF.
Right.
Which is the Land and Water Conservation Fund. Let me remind listeners, we're talking about that fund, which could sunset on September 30th of this year, the end of the federal fiscal year, without new action by Congress. Kelly Beamer is Executive Director of the Coalition of Oregon Land Trusts. Megan Wargo is the Director of Land Protection for the Pacific Crest Trail Association. You can be part of this conversation, too. Let's hear your stories about conserved land and its uses and ways you've had a chance to enjoy the lands that have been set aside through conservation. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. For either of you, it must be an interesting feeling, though, to be pulling for wanting there to be income from oil and gas leases so that you can get money into this fund that helps you conserve land. Kelly?
Yes and no. I would say, this is Megan. Energy development is going to happen, and this has been a really good program that, as Kelly mentioned, has had bipartisan support and allowed for kind of a mitigation. You know that we are going to have to do energy development, and this is a way to kind of take what the potential impacts on the environment from one area to at least take that and mitigate and protect the environment in another area. And so it is a good program. It's been a win-win, and it allows us to protect conservation lands in a way that we are not drawing upon taxpayer dollars to do it.
And so do you have friends in Congress who are helping with efforts to reauthorize? Kelly?
Absolutely, yeah. We had an exciting movement happen recently where Chairman Murkowski and Ranking Member Cantwell of the Senate Energy and Natural Resource Committee have been working on an energy bill that does include reauthorization of the Land and Water Conservation Fund. The Oregon Senate leadership is very supportive. Senator Wyden and Merkley have both been outspoken champions of the Land and Water Conservation Fund, and I think they realize the short timeline we're on to get it reauthorized this year. So it's just a matter of continuing to show the national significance and hopefully find a vehicle to pass through the full Senate and House for reauthorization of the program.
You mentioned the original version of the LWCF came in 1964, which would put it in the same year anyway as the Wilderness Act. Was it designed to be a complement to it?
Not that I know of. I believe it was its own standalone piece.
Again,
you know, I wasn't around then, but I do believe that they were kind of sister legislation that, you know, one could exist without the other. But Land and Water Conservation Fund, I do believe, was created to help enact and follow through with the Wilderness Act.
Does the fund specify what becomes of the land, whether it becomes owned by the public or does it become owned by some other entity like a land trust?
Well, there's really great flexibility in the fund in that it does go to public agencies for acquisition of in-holdings, as Megan was referencing. It does allow for private entities to receive those funds to purchase lands. Easement, for example, there's a program within the Endangered Species Act called the Section 6 Cooperative Grant, and those do allow for land trusts to purchase easements on private land for the protection of special wildlife habitat. So, there's also a stateside fund that allows for local governments to apply to the Land and Water Conservation Fund for city parks, for you know, municipal infrastructure to support recreation. It's incredibly flexible and is really it's really diverse in the way it's used around the country.
I can imagine that once people get to know about what's available there, that the requests probably far outnumber the and in both in number and in dollars what is even at its best able to be delivered by the fund.
Mm-hmm. In Oregon, I believe over the last 5 decades. We've had Oregon received approximately $300 million from the Land and Water Conservation Fund. But as you said, it's an intense competition that goes through the appropriation cycle. And it really does require broad support and broad community support for a project to get through that finish line.
We have an email here from Ernesto in Ashland. He asks, is the fund only for acquisition? What about deferred maintenance on public lands that are already in disrepair? What can either one of you tell us about that?
The fund is only for acquisition, but part of the deal that Kelly was mentioning earlier that is lined up to hopefully reauthorize the program also sets up a program that would help cover those deferred maintenance costs.
Is the legislation that would reauthorize the Land and Water Conservation Fund, first of all, would it continue to give it a sunset date? Would it be permanent? And is it standalone legislation, or is it tacked onto something else, like a bill regulating the National Dust Foundation or something?
The legislation that is a potential for reauthorization would permanently reauthorize the fund. And it did pass out of the Energy Committee in the Senate. And so there has been some movement, but it has not yet gone to the floor.
Okay, but it is a standalone bit of legislation, not an add-on or a rider to some other piece of legislation.
It's part of the energy bill.
Okay. Megan Wargo, I imagine that we're not just sitting here thinking about the deadline coming and that being the end of things, because the hope is that it goes on beyond that. Given that, I mean, what kinds of ideas do you have at the Pacific Crest Trail Association about great places to spend some of the Land and Water Conservation Fund adjacent to the PCT?
Yeah, we work with our partners at the Forest Service who manage the Pacific Crest Trail from its whole distance from the Mexican border to the Canadian border. And through that process, we've identified that about 10% of the PCT still goes through private land. And so that means that there's, in most cases, a very narrow trail easement that allows people access to cross a private piece of property, but still means that those private landowners have the right to build homes, install power lines, cut trees, right up to the line of the trail. And so we certainly have a list of projects that We estimate to be at about 1,500 parcels along the trail that are still in private ownership. And there are a number of willing sellers that own those private parcels that are looking to work with us. And that includes some properties, throughout the trail. And as I mentioned before, some of that is filling in checkerboards, filling in holdings within wilderness areas. And then some of those projects are down in Southern California where we're really trying to find a better route and a safer route for the trail through populated areas.
What's the usual dollar ratio on land acquisition versus conservation easement? Is it like 10% of what you'd pay to buy the land?
Usually a conservation easement, depending on how much development value and the restrictions that go into the easement, falls in a range of 40 to 60% of what the value of the fee title of the property would be.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so a little more than that, but around half, we can say anyway. So for either of you, describe how hopeful you are that Congress will come through. I mean, we're still talking about a Congress that 2 years ago allowed itself to shut part of the federal government down. Same Congress that allowed some of the provisions of the USA Patriot Act to expire for a few days just this year. I mean, given that background, are you hopeful that Congress will do what it needs to do to turn the Land and Water Conservation Fund back on before it expires on the end of September? Kelly?
We certainly hope so. I think one thing that helps, as Megan mentioned, this is not a taxpayer program. It's valued by both Democrats and Republicans across the country, hunters, anglers. It's huge for our recreation economy across the country. So I really do hope it rises to the top as a national priority.
We will see what happens. Congress not in session at the moment. We'll return in September with not a lot of time left before the sunset date of the Land and Water Conservation Fund, which at its best, $900 million a year for conservation projects around the country. Kelly Beamers, Executive Director of the Coalition of Oregon Land Trusts. Megan Wargo, the Director of Land Protection at the Pacific Crest Trail Association. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
Take care.